Hey, welcome inside the MTOM studios here at Iowa PBS. I'm Paul Yeager, glad to have you here for today's discussion about a phrase that has reemerged this recent grain trading time, and it's the phrase, oats no, or is it oats knows, or is it oat no? I don't know, whatever it is, Randy Stryker of oatinformation.com is going to fill us in about the oat market. It has been dry in Canada and the upper United States where the product is grown. So what does that mean for, say, wheat, corn, soybeans, canola, and other crops that are grown? This is a very, very interesting discussion, and it's going to come back to the millennial and what type of food is grown and what type of food is being consumed. That is the subject of today's MTOM Show podcast. We come out with new episodes each and every Tuesday, so you can subscribe, or it's easy for me to say, in audio form or on video form on our YouTube channel. We have a market-to-market YouTube channel, and underneath it is a subsect just here for the MTOM Show podcast. So if you want to go back and watch an episode about, say, crickets or photography, or the hog market, we've got them. Now, here's Randy Stryker. Randy, as a dual citizen, what is the benefits of having dual citizenship for anybody who wants to do it? Is it good? Is it bad?
Oh, it's excellent. I'm one of those fortunate individuals that have lived in two very great countries and have the ability to go back and forth. I have family on both sides of the border and friends in both countries, so I'm quite fortunate.
What was the reasoning for doing it?
I'm born in Canada, but my parents immigrated to the United States in the 60s, and then I stayed until my senior year in Canada, and I went back to Canada to play hockey, really, and then developed a family in Canada, and came back to the U.S. and worked in the grain industry for a while, then went back to Canada, and now I'm back in the U.S. For probably quite a while.
You're feeding that stereotype of playing hockey.
It's at that, in those days back in the 70s, if you wanted to play good hockey, you went to Canada. So
yeah,
I left in my senior year and I went to play junior hockey in Canada. So
where was that? Ontario, Manitoba?
No, Selkirk, Manitoba. It was with the Selkirk Steelers on junior team and then the Selkirk Fishermen. So
okay. Yeah. Those are great team names.
It was a really great experience. It was so different than when I had experienced playing high school hockey in Minnesota. The pace was faster, players were bigger, skill levels were much higher. So for me, it was a pretty big deal at the time.
What position?
Goalie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Goalie.
Yeah.
There is an old story that one of my old bosses, and I've told it before on this podcast, and I'll say it again. There was a couple of guys who played linebacker in the NFL who said their most stressed day was their first day in the trading pits. And these are guys that played linebacker in the NFL. Did playing goalie or playing hockey at the level above high school get you ready for the world of trading commodities?
I think to a certain degree, you learn how to handle stress at a much higher level. Things were moving much quicker. Having been in the pits a couple of times, it's pretty crazy down there. So, yeah, I know quite a few guys actually that have done that. Have gone from one to the other, and it's different. And it was the same for me. So, it's a different world down in the green pits. Unfortunately, we don't have them anymore. Everything is electronic now, and that's really kind of unfortunate. So.
You're stuck to studying technical charts versus another trader in the pit to figure out where they're going.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was trained when I traded grain for some late 70s into the late 80s. So I'm quite used to it. And I was trained both technically and fundamentally. So it was kind of easy to flip back and forth.
Well, how'd you get started in it in the first place?
You know, I was going to university in Canada, and I just got married, and I needed a job, part-time job, and I saw an ad in the paper. I'd been working and doing some payrolls at a grain elevator just outside of Winnipeg, and I saw an ad for logistics coordinator, had no idea what it was, didn't know what a grain trader was, and I applied and got the job, and fortunately for me, I stepped in, and within a year, I was in the trading department, and a whole new world opened up to me, something I never knew existed. So, and for me, it's been an incredible career. of both trading grain, managing grain companies. In fact, I managed the biggest grain company in Canada, XCan Grain at the time. And I've been an analyst, had my own company, Oat Information, for roughly about 25 years. So.
But you didn't start in oats, did you?
No, but I was fortunate when I started in the, when I became a full trader, I actually started the oat trade between Sweden and Finland in the United States. So I made those first couple of trades. It kind of opened up the door. And just as I was starting the free trade agreement, there was tariffs removed. So the trade flow between Canada and the United States increased significantly. So I stepped in to the oat market at a time when it was really essentially brand new. There was almost no exports, very little trade between the two companies. And now Canada's largest exporter of oat products in the world. Probably the second largest oat milling industry behind the United States. So I'm fortunate I got started at a very early time. I developed a lot of contacts, a lot of information. So for me, it worked out just ideally. And then I stepped in up from trading right into doing market analysis. At the time I started this company in the late 80s, early 90s, almost nobody was doing oat analysis. Everybody was doing corn, soybeans, canola, barley. So for me, it was quite fortunate. I had the expertise and the contacts and the knowledge. So I stepped in, and right now we're pretty much the only people in the world doing it at this level. So,
well, I'm not asking you to name names of these companies, but you do work with a lot of big companies that might have something, have an interest in oats, right? That's kind of who.
Virtually every major miller in the world is our client. A lot of the major food companies are our clients, governments, private industry, funds, specs, brokers, traders, anybody that touches on oats pretty much comes to us, because we are really the only one doing, only company doing in-depth analysis on the oat market. And we essentially do it from farm gate to consumer. And we do not only a daily and weekly newsletter, but we do a lot of consulting work for companies that want to build new mills, expand their markets. So again, it's kind of a niche market, and it's fortunate that we just got a hold of it years ago. And it's something that we really do dominate globally. So
how big is your company then?
There's six of us around the globe. What would have taken probably 15 people, six can do now. The technology is astounding. Databases, global connections. We can be virtually anywhere in the world and do our jobs. So it's a whole different world. You just don't need the amount of staff that you had prior years.
And the amount of how quick things transpire from making a trade to writing analysis, you can write a lot of it from wherever, as long as you have a keyboard.
Yeah, from wherever. It's certainly changed. When I started as a trader, we had a telex machine. And if you're too young to understand that, it would take days sometimes to finish a trade off. We'd contact our broker in Europe, we'd contact an agent, we'd contact somebody else, and now you do it in a heartbeat, yeah, in seconds. We transmit information in seconds. We try to do everything in real time as much as we can here. Markets move very quickly. Some of the information takes a little more analysis and a little more thought into it, but so much of it is very quick. It's a fast-paced market compared to when I started.
So it's in line with everything else, the wheat, the corn, the soybeans. Yes. And I mean, it's just because it might not be something you think of, not you, but a person thinks about on a regular basis, it's moving fast all around you.
Very quickly. Cash markets never used to move this quickly. Now they do, just as quick as the futures markets. So it's a really a different world than when I started trading.
Why is that? I mean, not why is it different? Why is it moving so fast?
Just the pace, the movement of information, the speed of it. The old days, we'd have to pick up a telephone. We might have to go down to the trading pits. You might be lucky to see a client once in a while. Now you're in contact with clients almost nonstop. In fact, we constantly have information moving because we can set things up on delayed movement of information. It's almost 24 hours a day. It just never stops. Futures markets, we've got extended hours. We have night trading. We never had in the past. So information moves constantly. Nonstop.
You mentioned the niche. How niche is this market now? Where are we at for bushels compared to when you started in the late 80s with your own company?
If you go back to the 70s or even the 80s, oats were one of the major six grains in oilseeds. it's probably still classified in there. The commercial trade of it was very small, but it was a lot of it was fed on farms. So essentially you had a very large volume commodity, and certainly not corn or wheat, but large by comparison. At one time we were exporting maybe 50,000 tons of oats to the US. Now we're exporting probably about 2.1, 2.2 million. We milled about maybe 25, 30,000 tons in Canada. We now mill a million tons. So the volumes have increased, but what's happened is we just simply produce less oats because we don't feed as much on farm anymore. When tractors came in, we got rid of horses. Horses were a big consumer of oats. Horses do still eat oats, but they're mostly hobby horses or thoroughbreds. So it was really the loss of on-farm feeding just shrank the market down to a point where we're probably at what we call maintenance feeding. They're still using it for backgrounding on livestock, some hogs, but it is not what it was years ago, simply because you don't have the horses. Really, you're growing oats for backgrounding with livestock, and you're really growing oats. I don't know any farmers that would say they're oat growers unless they're selling commercially. And those are really hardcore farmers. In Canada, we have about 15,000 farmers that are part of the Prairie Oat Growers Association that are quite active in the oat market. If you went back, you could probably double that if you went back 30 years. So you've got larger acreage on farms for oats, smaller number of farms that are actually planting the oat acres, just less consumed for livestock. So the market's shrunk to the point right now where really in a combination of things like more gluten-free, more organic, less glyphosate, less inputs, companies are looking for very specific oats, very specific varieties from very specific regions. So it's become very much a boutique commodity. If you went back probably 20 years ago, and I'll name a name, a company like General Mills would buy just about any quality of oats they could get out of Canada in volume. And they could use all of those oats, whether it was within the mill itself or reselling to other markets, or actually using for storage and delivery against the Chicago Board of Trade Oat contract. All that is done with. Now companies are so specific on their needs. They need either gluten-free, organic, they don't want glyphosate in it. So they're very specific what they want. So there's more and more contracting directly with the farmers. It's not really an open market commodity, though it is traded to a large degree as an open market commodity. So it's, again, the loss of the feed sector. More specific needs from the food, from the consumers, and it filters down to the food companies. So it's really made it a niche commodity. You'll get some companies that will only buy from specific grain companies in Canada, specific varieties, and in specific regions.
Well, when you use the word boutique, that sometimes is code for higher priced because it is a unique, specific product. And that's probably been to the advantage of oats, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's higher price. Unfortunately, we're kind of in a transition period in the oat market and pricing. A lot of the grain companies and a lot of the millers and the food companies still price oats as a feed grain. They'll look at wheat and they'll look at corn and they'll look at barley and they'll try to compare it, the old way we used to do it. So from that perspective, oats are probably on an average underpriced. But the dynamics are shifting as companies want more specifics, glyphosate-free, gluten-free, specific regions. They're having to pay premiums. So when you say boutique, it could imply higher prices, but it certainly doesn't. What you're seeing this year in the oat market is in its all-time highs, exceptionally high numbers. Oats are still used and are still priced as a feed grain. It's slowly moving away from that. A lot of it has to do with the fact that companies don't hedge oats anywhere near as much as they did in the past. In fact, two of my major clients in the U.S. That are oat buyers no longer use the Chicago Board of Trade as an oat hedge.
Straight up contract?
Yeah, flat price contract. And yet, if you run the correlations between cash and oat futures, they actually correlate quite well. But the problem is volumes. And the problem is that the prominent traders in those pits are really fund specs. And they're using algorithms, and those are proprietary, and they've changed the whole game around. So As a hedging mechanism, it no longer works. So companies have looked at flat price, which has brought you to more contracting, which has now made it more boutique. Higher price, I would say on an average, no.
Well, and that goes back to the root of why we're even talking here, Randy, is because the price has gone up to a level that we just haven't seen in a while. But I think what you're trying to tell me is, yeah, that price is there, but there's not many people buying at that price because there's big contractors or big end users that have bought already at probably a lower rate because they've locked in. So that price misleading then to
no,
say that?
The price is accurately reflecting supply and demand. And we are at, we're going to have record low ending stocks in both Canada and the United States. We've got about a 35% drop in total supplies, about 40% drop in production in Canada. So these numbers are real. Yes, the millers bought forward contract, which they normally do. It's not unusual for the U.S. companies in a normal year to contract upwards to 500,000 metric tons from the Canadian farmers before we even seed it. So forward coverage in the oat market is very common. What made it easier is when you could hedge it. With less hedging, it becomes more risky. So the millers on paper did have a lot of oats contracted. A lot of farmers had to buy out of their contracts. So now you've picked up the money side of it as a food company, you still have to physically buy oats. I would say right now, and I ran a story last night about the Minneapolis Duluth Superior oat stocks. They've probably got enough or over last year's numbers, even given the drought and the sharp reduction in supply. So the millers can probably, you know, last probably till midwinter, maybe a little later in the winter. Come springtime in the summer, they're going to have to buy oats and they're going to have to belly up. And that's when the price is really going to hit hard home. So we're seeing right now oat prices in Canada about $8.50 Canadian dollars per bushel. Unbelievable numbers. You know, we're used to seeing 2.5, maybe 3, maybe 4. I've had old oat buyers tell me there's no way they'd ever say $4 to bid on oats. Now companies are bidding $8.
So. And say four, they wouldn't even pick up the phone.
No, they wouldn't pick up the phone. They never say that. So it's
they never say
that. It was really funny. I had one of my a gentleman I work with on a consulting side is both a farmer and he was an oat buyer for one of the bigger grain companies in Canada. He said I'd never pay $4 for oats. And he called me the other day and said he just sold a truckload of oats for $8, which I found kind of humorous. So I said, you know, you do understand the word hypocrite, right? So the numbers are real. They're going to hit home a little later. The millers can sit back a little bit. On paper, and we've been banging the drum on this, Paul, on paper, we have enough oats in North America to fill the commercial oat demand. And I stress the word on paper. The problem is that historically, most of the oats are bought in about a 200-350 mile radius, if you put a pin in Saskatchewan. The rest of those oats are scattered across Canada, across the U.S. So it becomes, on paper, you have enough oats, but it's a logistics challenge trying to get enough of those oats in place so that you can get them to the place that needs them. So if you look at the U.S. side of the border, not a lot of companies normally handle oats at their elevators in either North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota. So you'd have to go to a grain company and say, that doesn't handle oats, and I need to buy, you know, 40,000 bushels of oats. That's a whole, you know, you're looking at a whole different shift in strategy. You know, do they want to handle it? Do they have the capacity? So now there's a big challenge of trying to find those little pockets of the on paper enough oats.
You mentioned on paper. Is that we talk about that in corn and soybeans with what USDA says on paper. Is it the same for oats?
Well, it's when you put your supply and demand estimates together based on government estimates of what the crop size is, we look at what the use side is and we come up with the numbers. So unfortunately, I think when the original survey was done with Canada, they used satellite technology, which they've been testing, and this is the first time they've used it. So the yield numbers may change. They could change significantly or be a minor change come December. I think fourth or fifth when the new estimates come out. So my guess is we may be on the high side on our estimates right now, because when they actually physically survey the farmers, it may not be what the satellite technology showed us. So we're kind of in an unknown area here right now. And if it comes in any lower, quite frankly, I'm not sure if, you know, if they dropped it, they dropped the yields by one or two bushels. I mean, it's not going to matter. We're short oats. There's still room on paper. And I use that word on paper, and we use it frequently, and we do it with quotation marks, because it's that same logistics challenge. You're going to have to go to every nook and cranny to find them. You know, in Canada, we're used to going to a grain company overnight. You can buy 30, 40, 50,000 tons of oats overnight. You won't be buying that kind of volume now. It'll be, you know, more farmers they have to hunt down. But I just got two emails today. I got, it was from U.S. companies, and what they indicated to me was they, you know, were talking to farmers in the, in, you know, harvest time in the U.S. in the summer, and essentially they said they had no oats, and all of a sudden they've found oats. So my guess is we're going to see the same thing in Canada. Farmers, you know, my experience, rarely sell in rising markets, and rightly so. You get a bump down in here, and seasonals point to higher, you know, toward the end of November. Come January, cash flow becomes, you know, more of an issue. Seasonal trends could potentially kick in. At some point, the millers will back away. I don't know when it is, probably the springtime, you know, as they anticipate the potential for higher production numbers. They'll stretch out as much as they can. It, you know, the dynamics could change here, but right now the farmer's in control.
And you mentioned the shortage, and a lot of this is drought. And this is it two consecutive years of dry conditions that have led to this, or is it just one big year that's been a problem?
This has been a major drought. Yeah, record. I've never seen anything like this in the 40 some years I've been in the grain business. The Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, they all got, you know, hit by, you know, maybe not as severe, but they also got whacked, you know, in terms of yield. A lot more oats are cut for hay. Yields are down. One of the bigger problems we have and the challenges right now that we're watching is not only do we have a yield reduction in Canada certainly in the U.S., quality issues. So a miller that, you know, for example, wanted to make, you know, 10 pounds of oat flake or oat flour, now he has to use more oats than he used last year. They have to readjust the machines. You're going to have to put more oats through it. So, you know, when we say a miller was using, you know, 400,000 tons of oats last year, he's going to use more this year just to try to get the same output.
Just the quality is not there. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned major drought, quality changes. I've had two or three people a week, it seems, ask me about. I just had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday or Monday, who asked, "Well, should I start growing oats?" You know, and I'm just like, "That's a really hard thing." Because you just mentioned if someone is far away, remote, not in a current existing contract, it's pretty hard for them in a normal year to get anybody to buy their product. Do I have that right?
Yeah, in Canada, it's not. You can almost always find a buyer for your oats. Maybe not the price you wanted, but there's always steady buying. In the U.S., it's a different story. Having worked on both sides of the border, there's just simply less oats grown. You guys are at record low production, and that's been declining since the early 60s. Less grain companies than certainly when I worked in the Midwestern U.S. in the 80s are handling oats. There's just no profitability for the grain companies. So for a U.S. farmer, Iowa is a little different story. You've got grain millers in your backyard. You've got Quaker in your backyard, or PepsiCo Quaker. If you're moving in the Dakotas, if you're in Pennsylvania or in, you know, New York or Missouri, where there's, you know, smaller amounts, it's a lot more challenging to find an oat buyer. In Canada, you can almost every grain company handles them one form or another. And you've got far more oat mills in Canada, far more operations that are taking oats. So it's really different challenges on either side of the border. And the U.S. certainly has a bigger challenge. Certainly the U.S. farmer does.
Well, and this farmer told me, he says, once I get it under wheels, you know, it can go anywhere. I'm like, yeah, but does it pencil out to take it across two states it just doesn't always on a semi.
Yeah, the good news for the U.S. farmers, we have seen more U.S. companies buy more U.S. oats. I would say probably right now 90 to 95% of all the oats milled in the United States come from Canada. But we are seeing more and more regional buying, I guess. Part of that has to do with varieties. Millers tend to like the same varieties going through your equipment. And when they have to switch it, people ask me, will the millers buy Scandinavian oats this year? Yeah, they've looked at it, certainly. Have they done it in the past? Once in probably the last 25 years, just for the sole reason. It requires equipment adjustment. They just really don't like doing that. And varieties can become an issue too. So will they mill it if they have to? Absolutely. You can't make a Cheerio out of barley.
It's not the same product, is it, at all?
No, it's not. So, I think that, you know, those companies are pretty well covered for quite a while. So, but yeah, it's a challenge for the U.S. firm.
So if I, the question I ask a lot on the show is, there's this acreage battle. It's if wheat, which rocketed up at the beginning of this week, it's been on a tear. There's a bullish outlook for it. There's somebody who's been planting corn and soybeans, and they're looking at corn going, gosh, can I even get nitrogen to put on it? I mean, there's an acreage battle. Is oats going to benefit from this acreage battle right now?
Therein lies the problem. People are looking and going, and we're seeing, you know, old crop oats being bid at around $8.50 Canadian per bushel. We're seeing new crop around $6.50. I almost never see that. So the question is, do I grow oats at $6.50? And is that profitable? I mean, farmers, unless it's a crop rotation issue, it's a net returns. Oats are, I mean, we're just one of, we've got crop problems all across Canada. It's canola seed, it's wheat, it's barley, it's peas, it's lentils, it's everything. So how does it pencil out? I haven't done my, my margin sheets for new crop yet. We're going to do them later on this month as we give a presentation for the Canadian oat growers. We're battling everybody. So, you know, that looks like a phenomenal number, but does it pencil in for a grower? Each individual farm is different, but we're battling every other crop, and wheat looks strong. So canola seed is another one. So, and in Canada, we look at wheat. We don't look at corn. We look at wheat and barley. That's how we compare it. And we really look at spring wheat. The rule of thumb we use is that generally oats would have to be about 50% of wheat value on the farm, spring wheat. If you had, you know, if you were 51 or 52 or 55% of wheat, you'd buy acres, oat acres. It might be holding again this year, but again, we're battling every other crop. And you're right, input costs are through the roof. The good news is oats is a low input crop. So, you know, that might work in our favor, you know, in the long run to see more acres. We are going to need more acres, and we do have to battle these other crops. So we've been banging the drum on, you have to get oat prices up versus wheat and barley, and you have to hold them there. Now, more farmers in Canada are making decisions on their rotations in the fall because they're buying their inputs. They're sticking more to a rotation from year to year. If I go back 10 years, you could buy a lot of acres in the spring. That's becoming less and less the case. So my guess is that this year may be an anomaly, but if we haven't made, a lot of farmers are making those decisions now in the fall. They're not waiting until the spring.
They got to make it. They got to make that decision. And yep. Some of them are looking at that pencil and refiguring a whole lot of things. So you mentioned a couple of things that I've held out as long as I can, Randy, but I got to ask, is it oats knows? Oats know. What's the phrase, and why is it outdated and make you cringe when anybody says it?
As a young trader, I heard that all the time, oats knows. It's an old adage. It goes way back. I don't know the origins of it, but, you know, people believe that if the oat market was moving up or down, it was a leading indicator of where the other cereals would go. I guess I'd have to go back and do, you know, 50 years worth of correlations to see how true that is and whether it was a leader or a follower. Because it is a boutique commodity, it doesn't play out anymore. So we use the phrase as we do a lot of other old ones in the grain trade, but I don't think it applies anymore. Oats, you know, because it is probably a smaller crop, responds quicker. There's less of a cushion, you know, both up and down. But I don't think it applies anymore. I've not seen any evidence. We look at data all day long. We run correlations. We track wheat against oats. We look at oats against corn. We look at oats against spring wheat, hard wheat, soft wheat. We run correlations. We're always looking for, you know, the edge and where's the answer. But it just doesn't correlate that well anymore for me to say that. And did oats take a leading role in this? I'd have to go back, but I think wheat and oats were kind of moving at the same time upwards.
They were going they were going at that same time. So, but there's one adage that does hold true that you need to see in the oats market for something to change, and it's rain makes grain. I mean, that's the only way we're going to get some of this filled.
Yes, very much. I've also said that oats are, you know, virtually a weed, so it can take a lot of abuse. So,
well, that's what wheat said. That's what they say about wheat too.
Yeah, it's. I've seen oat crops do quite well in what we thought were, you know, way too dry conditions. The yields have come out above average. A lot of it is timely rain to fall at the right time on each farm. Certainly less inputs, less you know, less maintenance. It's a hardy crop, but yeah, rain makes grain, and we do need moisture. We've got a lot of soil replenishing moisture that we need to take place in the spring, a lot. Mm-hmm. What does favor it, oats are a little bit deeper seeded, you know, oil seeds, for example, for canola seed in Canada are more shallow seeded. So, you know, if we've got some subsoil, it certainly makes it more beneficial for oats. Right now, we're struggling with topsoil, subsoil, everything. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we get some snow cover in the winter, which turns into moisture in the spring. But we've got problems.
Okay, as we wrap up here, Randy, what would you say is the biggest fundamental story besides the weather playing out in oats as we move forward in the next 6 to 18 months?
Well, we've had actually, I would call it the perfect storm if you want. We had, you know, production that just basically fell off the table, ending stocks everywhere. And we have seen nothing but steadily rising year after year demand for oat-related foods, breakfast cereals, snack bars, oatmeal. Then you throw the oat beverages on top of this. That's the game changer. It's a whole new level that we've taken the oat market to. I would say that was, I would say with the food side on the oats and the beverage side, and I would say the beverages is kind of what's tipped everything over. Consumers are looking, and we look at the millennials, and we look at the data, the numbers on the food side, and they just continue to climb. Oats is a natural, healthy, and safe food, and consumers are gravitating toward it very quickly. So long-term, the growth potential is very good for the oat market. It's a great crop. For a farmer that has access to a marketplace, it's a great crop. And to be in the oat market, I never, you know, 40-some years in the oat market, it's a phenomenal time. Unfortunately, we had the drought, but it's the food sector right now that's driving this.
Is this a little bit of an indicator, maybe for the corn and soybean folks, about when you talk about the safety of the grain of the product and the healthiness of it? I mean, there's a lot of people who look with a skeptical eye of corn and soybeans and its health and the chemicals used to grow it. And the consumer, the millennial consumer, is really speaking right now. Is that something that maybe corn and soybeans needs to kind of wonder? Are we prepared?
All crops, including oats. We have told you know, farm groups, and I don't want to poke my nose into what farmers do, but and I understand their plight. I mean, it's going to require more equipment, different shift, higher prices for farmers on oats. But the consumer is telling them they don't want glyphosate. They, you know, they want gluten-free, whether they need it or not. They want less chemicals and less inputs on their crops. So the oat industry has been very aware of it. I've, you know, without getting myself into too much trouble, I hope, strongly suggesting that the oat industry take a leadership role. The consumer is going to dictate it in the end. And corn and soybeans and canola and oil seeds all need to take a hard look at it. In the end, the consumer, whether the farmer likes it or not, will dictate what they want. And when the farmer has told me that they would need more and more money for oats, I said, then you ask for it. If the consumer wants it, they'll pay for it. The food company will pass it through. The farmers will get more money. But it's in the end, the consumer drives it all. And they're telling us very clearly they want natural, healthy, and safe. And that's what oats are. And to a lesser degree, some of the other cereal crops are not. So it's a boom. And again, it's a consumer looking at, you know, what do I want to put in my body? You know, what's in it? I've been watching some of the technology. They're talking, you know, at some point, they'll be able to trace this, you know, an oat kernel back to wherever they need to. So traceability, accountability, sustainability, you know, those big buzzwords, they're all in vogue. And that's, you know, they're not buzzwords. They're, in a sense, they're buzzwords, but they're real. This is what the consumer wants. Yeah.
And the consumer has been speaking in a lot. I mean, that's why the meat industry has changed a little bit in some of their products that they've offered over time. And at this time, it sounds like the consumer is going to have something to say when it's all said and done about grains.
Very much.
Yep. Randy Stryker, thank you so much. Appreciate the time. And I would say some type of hockey-related question, but that's just too stereotypical and too easy. Thanks, Randy.
You're welcome.
My thanks to Randy Stryker. Any information or feedback for me, it's markettomarket.org. That's the website. The email is markettomarket@iowapbs.org. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for watching. Maybe you were listening. Maybe you were reading. We'll see you next time.